This podcast of Bookworm is a production of KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com. Support this free service by September 5th and you could win a Mini Cooper S convertible. Go to KCRW.com for details.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
From KCRW Santa Monica, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today's program is the last in our special series, Escaping the Cage, Identity, Multiculturalism, and Writing. This is novelist Russell Banks.
I spent most of my adult life either on the border between Florida and the Caribbean or the northern border of the United States in a very literal and physical sense, but I've always felt as though I was on the borders of identity between other human beings, between men and women, between white people and black people, between Americans and non-Americans, between adults and children. In a sense, this is the location of my imagination. I don't feel comfortable with one identity.
This is novelist, essayist, and filmmaker Susan Sontag.
I don't think of the work as reflecting me any more than, more generally speaking, I think that I write to express myself. I don't think I'm writing to express myself or to define myself. I think of those as low, ignoble motives. Now, of course, I'm sure I do express myself in my writing, and I'm sure I do define myself in my writing, but that's not the point, the purpose, the intention, the goal.
You know, when I began planning to do a series on identity, I made a wish list of the people I felt I had to speak to about this subject. And at the top of that list was Dr. Maya Angelou, my guest today. In a certain sense, in 1970, when she published I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, she brought to consciousness, to permanent consciousness, the idea that one can invent oneself, that the rights that one has as an individual, one takes for oneself and then earns from culture. But culture is not rushing forward to welcome you. It's always the result of a decision that gets made first. Now, in her most recent book, Hallelujah, The Welcome Table, A Lifetime of Memories with Recipes, there's a very touching story about your mother who has you over for her once-a-month lunch, having prepared your favorite red rice. She's immaculately dressed and made up, as always, as she is both in the prose of your autobiographies as in life. And she tells you, I know that you are going to be someone.
Well, actually, we were walking down the street after this delicious lunch that she had made for me. And she said, baby, and she was 5'4" and I'm 6 foot. And I stopped and looked down at her. She was so pretty and made up and diamond earrings and all that. She said, you know, I think you're the greatest woman I've ever met. I was 20 years old. And I looked at this woman who owned hotels and diamonds and big cars. She said, you are very kind, and you are very intelligent. And those two values don't always go together. Just like Mrs. Eleanor Roosevelt, Dr. Mary McLeod Bethune, and my mother, she said, you are in that category.
At that time, what do you suppose you supposed you were going to be?
Well, I thought I was going to be a real estate broker and that I would have matching shoes and purse, alligator, and I would have a briefcase. But when I got onto the streetcar After she told me that, I thought about her. And I thought, she's very intelligent. And she used to say she was too mean to lie. And so, suppose she's right. Suppose I might become somebody.
It fascinates me because, you know, those of us who've read the first volumes of your autobiography know that this was a life that re-began in silence after what had been a brutal sexual assault, and that this silence gave way to initial fumblings in the world.
That's true.
And that at a certain point, friends of yours are sitting around a table. Now, fortunately, these friends include Dr. James Baldwin and other writers of his time. I think there was Jules Pfeiffer as well at that table.
And his then-wife, Judy Pfeiffer.
And they say to you, why aren't you writing the stories of your life? Was that the first time that you attempted such a thing?
To write autobiography. I said, I will not. And when the editor from Random House phoned Bob Loomis in 1968 and asked me to write an autobiography, I said, I will not. I'm a poet and playwright, and I will not. But then he continued to ask, and I'm sure he spoke to Jimmy Baldwin, who knew me as well as anyone can know another person. Because Bob Loomis said, Miss Angelo, I will not ask you again to write an autobiography because it's so difficult. And to write autobiography as literature is almost impossible. Then I think I'll try it. Which means that Jimmy Baldwin had told him, if you want Maya Angelou to do something, tell her she can't do it.
So you had a sense of presence from acting and dancing and
yes.
some singing and a sense of the drama of stories. Mm. And then it seems to me with I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, you began to create Maya Angelou.
I recognize the creation, I think. Might be more apt, Mr. Silverblatt. I was, of course, inventing myself, but also being invented by my ancestors and my family, and by the times in which I lived, by the system in which I lived. I was being created. I lived in my little village in Arkansas, when being black was so onerous that people said that town was so prejudiced that black people couldn't eat vanilla ice cream. So I was certainly created in part by the times and by my people in history, but I had something to say about it too.
Because when I was reading from the new book, Hallelujah, The Welcome Table, which is published by Random House, which is really a series of vignettes and memories along with recipes.
Yes.
Well, allow me to praise you because, you know, at first when I got the new book, I said, oh, recipes. It won't be for this literary program. And then when I started to read the pieces in it, I realized that this was, in a way, your happiest book in years, because the events in A Song Flung Up to Heaven are such tragic events. Mm. The events in the first two books are tragic as well. Here is a Dr. Angelou who I've been led to believe exists, but you're telling salty stories, or at least retelling them. One of them is your grandmother's.
Yeah.
You're drinking. You're telling people, you know, what you will and won't take. And it's the Maya Angelou that I've had glimpses of from book to book. It gave me the feeling that you had untied your hands from, I'll use your word, the onerous requirements of biography and autobiography, and had come back to, I'm going to have a good time at this. I'm old enough, strong enough, wise enough to say who I am without having to make an impression on a single soul.
It's true. It's true. You have read it aptly. That's exactly. This book was a delight. Not only do I cook, but I love it. And I know that cooking can be used to flirt, to encourage, to discourage. It can be used to lift a person up. It can be used to facilitate a conciliation and forgiveness.
When we spoke last time, you talked to me about the way politeness can be used,
yes,
like cooking, to encourage, to discourage,
yes,
to flirt. And many people say, ah, Dr. Angelo has the voice of her generation, the black woman who believes in proper behavior and etiquette and uses her knowledge of those arts to inform the way people behave around her. Now, many younger writers coming up now don't have the ability to draw on the traditions that demand respect, that simply say, I don't care who I am, I know how you must treat me.
Yes.
And the respect I deserve has nothing to do with my physical situation on the face of this earth. It has to do with my inner sense of dignity. Now, many people, writers, are coming who are writing, in a sense, stories without dignity that are about the collapse of dignity. What would your advice be to them?
I would encourage young men and women, black and white, Asian, Latino, Native American, I would encourage them to go into the bathroom, close the door, and look in the mirror and see yourself and realize that you are the result of a lot of people's prayers, some you've never heard of, some you may never hear of, maybe not in this particular generation which created you, but somewhere two or three generations before, somebody got out of slavery or came across the border or got off a boat and said, I wish my great-grandchildren could live good lives, full lives, rich lives, lives which allowed them to be all they needed to be, to have joy and happiness and health and prosperity and passion and compassion. Just look in the mirror and see that.
Now, as a result of that searching glance, would the nature of what they're writing need to change?
I would think so. It couldn't change all of a sudden and overnight. But the more you see how valuable you are, the more you can see another person as being of value. And the more quickly the vituperatives, the vulgarities, the cruelties will leave your vocabulary. Because you see, I've noticed now people are calling each other dog. Hey dog, you're my dog. But you know, the person is not really a dog. A dog is a dog. A person is a person. A man is a man. And whether he likes it or not, he's going to be evaluated as a human being, not as a dog. And alas, the female of the dog species is a bitch. Women are not bitches. They are not. Female dogs are bitches. And it is imperative that young men and women stop describing themselves as something other than themselves. You can say, I'm not a very kind human being, or not a generous human being. I may be really a mean human being, but I'm a human being, which means that I have within my possibility everything. I have the possibility of being kind and fair and just and even merciful. I have it within my being to be that. So I wish they'd stop calling themselves out of their names.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Dr. Maya Angelou, author, most recently, of Hallelujah, the Welcome Table, published by Random House. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt, and I'm talking with Dr. Maya Angelou. Now, I don't know if you agree with me, but I feel that culturally our country has rarely been as ill-exposed to the imagination and to the gifts that language bring us that allow us to express the truth rather than repeat it.
I agree. I do agree with you. And I'm sorry for that. And I don't believe there's an accident. I don't believe it has been arrived at by accident. At the risk of sounding absolutely paranoid, I believe that young men and women have been encouraged to not speak. The hate, like dig, like yeah. I believe it. At the risk of sounding totally paranoid, because language separates us from other animals, as we are animals as much as they. But language separates us. It is imperative, if I'm going to be a whole human being, to explain to another whole human being how I feel. I need to say that I'm a particular delight for me is taking the aroma of lavender and the aromas of onion frying subtly and sautéing in a little good olive oil. I should be able to explain that to another human being, and the other human being should be able to comprehend what I'm saying. It is not enough for me to say, hey, smell, dig. It is not. But there's something that has been operated on and operating in the young people. And at the risk of anything, I think it was a design.
I would like to, may I match you paranoia
please,
for paranoia?
Please.
I sometimes both feel and fear that a decision was made to not educate young people because it would be better to have a large, uneducated working class than to have people who deserve jobs who you didn't want to give jobs to.
Michael Silverblatt, I totally agree, except for it is a non-working class.
Yes, thank you.
That's the only thing. The young men and women are, without education, are only able to do brute labor or sell illicit items, such as drugs and hot things that is stolen somebody else's property. What else can they do?
Well, you see, my nightmare is that this was... You see, if you can lure people dexterously enough and make it seem like the way of the world, you can tell them it's their own fault.
Guys.
You can say, no, we tried to give you the education yeah. you needed. You didn't...
But you wouldn't take it.
You wouldn't take it. And I've watched that. America
get to
forget
that.
How to teach to read. I've watched teachers who cannot teach reading.
I know, my dear. Skip Gates, Henry Louis Gates, did an interview, and he asked a young man, about 20, he said, you don't listen. You want to get out of this. This is the worst thing you could do. You don't want to spend your whole life doing this. And the young man looked directly at Dr. Gates and said, man, don't you see I'm already dead?
Ooh. Oh, God. What did Dr. Gates say?
I mean, what was that? They had to cut away. I saw it, and I just... on television. And I just wept for the children and myself. Maybe myself first. It's a design and it worked. Please, let's go on, please. I don't want to stay there.
I want to let me think for just a moment.
Please.
It's not easy to.
I know it. But I think if we continue on that.
Yes.
We'll
that's
never
fine.
Get up again.
Yes. Yes. One of the magnificent things, on the other hand, in this country is the fact that those people who are now reading the books suggested on Oprah Winfrey's show, or reading Anna Karenina,
yes.
and reading A Hundred Years of Solitude,
yes.
and reading the books that are the books.
That's true.
And in a sense, my impulse to do an identity series is something of a falsehood, mm-hmm. in that I think you begin with identity and you move beyond it to literature,
mm-hmm.
that there's a point at which you have inspired yourself to be something beyond what you could have ever dreamt of being, and then you create something transhuman, transcendently human, that lasts, it seems to me, beyond identity and dreams,
yes.
these products of the human imagination. You've been a signpost on that road, and I wanted to end by talking to you about that, mm-hmm. that movement from introducing people to who they are to bringing them into a sense of sacred purpose.
Mm. Well, I think that literature at its best is where we are all tending, wending our way to that human condition, the honesty of the human condition. That can be found in literature. And sometimes what we have to do to get there is to divest ourselves of pretensions and attitudes and posturings and preenings. And you come to a place where you can read James Baldwin, whether you're Asian or Spanish-speaking or white or black, or Jew or Muslim, you can read Baldwin or Innocent Vincent Millay. You can read Norman Mailer or Amiri Baraka. You can read Singer, the Chevy Singer, or Nawal El Sadawi, and say, or Kobo Abe, or Confucius, and say, this is the truth. It's a human truth. I was not a Spaniard in Spain during the Civil War. My real name was not Garcia Lorca, but he told the truth. That is the truth. I was not in Ireland. My name was not Sean O'Casey, but that is, or Edna O'Brien, that is the human truth. And so, whether it's Oe Kinzaburu in Japan, or Rabindranath Tagore in Bengal, the truth helps us to see the most important, to realize, probably the most important realization we can have, and that is, I'm not here alone.
Dr. Angelo, you're magnificent, and I've loved talking to you and crying with you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much. I want to see you again, Michael Silverblatt, and again and again.
Thank you. I'm very, very honored.
Thank you.
I've been talking with Dr. Maya Angelou. The most recent book is Hallelujah, The Welcome Table, published by Random House. You can read an excerpt, a vignette from that book, on the Bookworm page at kcrw.com. The producers of the Identity series are Michael Silverblatt, Melinda Siegel, and Alan Howard. The engineer at NPR West is Shireen Strausberg. Special production assistance from Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next week on Bookworm.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. Archived editions of this and other Bookworm programs can be found online at kcrw.com. Keyword Bookworm. Copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
As you ramble through the pages, books will take you through the ages, back to days of old when knights were bold and books.
Books, 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 books. Books. Books can be funny too.
Books make you laugh and sing. Books tell you everything. They're your treasure, friends in prose and rhyme.
Now it's Book of the Mouse.